Hi there, I'm Rachel, and this is my co-host,
Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real. We support the Jewish nation by putting a human face and a positive spin on all things Israel. We're going to tell you the story of ordinary people living in an extraordinary land. Israel is real. Boker tov lekol ha-mazinim.
Tzohoraim tovim le-mazinim shelanu be-Israel.
Shalom to all our listeners. From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. I just want to remind you that we're always grateful for your support. We're on the air because of your support. And if you'd like to help us out, we have a new website. And you can find us also at www.israelisreal.weebly.com. Israelisreal.weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y.com. You can also write to us at israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. Israelisreal1590 at gmail.com. Just a moment for a word from a sponsor.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's email alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, visit Vision's website, www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
Boker tov, Sonia.
Boker tov.
We like to start every week with a Hebrew word. And our Hebrew word today is cheshbon nefesh. Sonia, can you tell us a little bit about cheshbon nefesh?
Yes, but we need first of all to start from what's the meaning of cheshbon. So cheshbon can be a check, a bill, an invoice, an account, arithmetic, adding. We can go to cheshbon patuach, which means an open bill, if you want.
That's sort of like, you know, having an open bank account.
Exactly. But it also means that you are rethinking something. And usually you are rethinking something when you did something which is wrong. Or could it make it better? And about the cheshbon nefesh, it's a very deep thing. It's a self-introspection. It's taking a moral position. It's an observation. But why you are asking me? What's the cheshbon nefesh mean?
Well, you know, I remember it, when Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated, actually, and everybody was talking at that time about cheshbon nefesh, where we're at, who we are, and where we're going. And I remember taking that very seriously and wondering where I'm at. It was a self-reflection and taking a moment to assess who I am and where I was going. Excuse me. And the country at the time also was doing the same thing. And it just hit me as something, you know, very, very profound and something that people should sort of be doing, not just at a time when as a tragedy such as that, and perhaps this one we've had yesterday, but, you know, all the time. I think it's a very important thing to think about.
The most important thing in cheshbon nefesh is not running to the extremity. You don't want to have two poles and to say from one point of view, oh, this is the wrong, because everyone and each of us is in such a scala. Everyone is in another place. So this is why everyone have another cheshbon nefesh.
I also wanted to thank you, Sonia. Thank you for that.
Lavriot.
I wanted to mention today that we have an amazing guest. And we're talking about assessing ourselves, thinking about where we're at. And this amazing guest we have today has earned a doctorate in engineering from Rensselaer Polytech Institute. He has an honorary Doctor of Divinity from the Hebrew Union College in honor of his completion of 25 years in the rabbinate. He is a man of science and a man of religion who has worked for over 30 years in the field of engineering science, and after becoming an ordained rabbi in Judaism's Reform Movement in 1983, sorry, it's morning, that's what happens in the morning, he is actually the longest-serving rabbi in New Hampshire, 25 years and running. Our amazing guest is a founding member of the first Reformed Jewish congregation in the Nashua area, Congregation Beit Einu in Amherst, of which Sonia and I both participate in.
So and you are telling everyone that we know very good the guest.
We are very familiar with our guest. He is also, although there's a lot that we didn't know until we invited him here. He's also the president of the New England region of the Central Conference of American Rabbis. And adding to this very respectable list of accomplishments, our amazing, incredible guest is also the author of two important and fast-growing bestsellers on the topic of Jewish cemeteries. He's also an avid skier, a ski instructor who boasts of an innovative approach and philosophy to skiing, which he calls the Kabbalah of skiing. And he's also fondly referred to as the skiing rabbi. And I'd like our guests and our listeners to please meet Joshua Siegel. Shalom, Rabbi Siegel.
Shalom, shalom.
Boker tov.
Boker or.
Well, it seems that you're living a very well-balanced life. You're a rabbi, as we said, 25 years. That's sort of the spiritual side. You're a retired but still active scientist. I imagine we're talking sort of intellectual input there. You're a passionate skier and ski instructor and author. You're a teacher. So all of those careers also connecting with and finding a place in the community. And in Latin they say, and I can't say this, Sonia's going to have to help me there. In Latin it says?
Mens sana in corpore sana.
Which means?
A healthy mind in a healthy body.
A healthy mind and a healthy body. So you have a lot of careers and a lot of aspects to yourself. Which, do you have anyone in particular that you prefer?
Well, certainly the one of the best things that happened to me was when I decided to take a break from my tech career and attend the seminary in Cincinnati. And the rabbinic part is certainly number one on my list.
Ah, that's good to hear. So the spiritual is becoming number one.
Wow. My sense is that Judaism gives us the opportunity to be both spiritual, physical, and intellectual. None of them are excluded. So I would suggest that that the rabbinate allows me the most complete total picture.
I like that. I like that. Thank you for clarifying that. I really like that. So you find that there is a common thread in all of these professions and things that you do?
My sense is that God gives us, and I'm too dyslexic to know which is which, a left brain, a right brain, and a body. And there's the intellectual side, the spiritual side, and the physical side, and a life well led is a balance of these three things.
Well, I'm thinking about religion and science, which many find that is those two things are actually in conflict, or they think they're in conflict. I don't happen to agree, but the common belief is that religion and science somehow are in conflict with each other. And you're a man of science and religion, so how do you see those two as working?
Well, I always tell my congregants, my students, anybody who'll listen to me, that when you come to the synagogue, nobody asks you to check your brains at the door. The idea is, if it is beyond belief, it probably is. You really need to look at a spiritual side that's virtually impossible to explain by science. Science is very good at explaining things after they've happened, but in the in any given moment, the possibilities are virtually infinite. I suspect the vast majority of people who call themselves atheists merely have come up with a definition of God that is so far afield of true that when their description of God doesn't meet their personal needs, they say there's no God rather than maybe I've got God defined wrong.
I remember Voltaire saying that he is an atheist, and when he was dying, the people around asked him, can you come and with something that we can do for you? And he said, yes, bring a priest. Maybe it is, after all, a God.
And there's a similar story told about W.C. Fields passing away, who's noted looking at the at a Bible, and a friend of his asked, Mr. Fields, I didn't think you were a religious man, and he said, looking for loopholes. So anyway.
So we are going to a break right now.
We've got a question for about one.
Okay.
Time for one more question.
I understand that being a rabbi in training, you need to spend at least 1 year in Israel. And the question is how this experience makes something to you, how it's dissolved your interest in Israel and our nation.
A lot of people think Jews are one homogeneous group of people. And what you discover very quickly is that two Jews in one room means that there are at least three opinions, and the number gets, or the other way it's been described, as two Jews in a room equals an argument.
A debate.
Yes. So the seminary sends us to Israel for three or four different reasons. One is there's no place you're going to learn Hebrew better than in a country where Hebrew is the spoken language, and so much of being a rabbi is being able to go through Hebrew text and explain and expound on it. A second thing, there is no place in the world where there is a greater cross-section of Jews from the most secular to the most
religious.
Orthodox. Thank you. ritually observant. that's funny. Sonia helping me translate Hebrew to English.
She
does that very well.
It's here almost.
The other thing is, so much of the Bible describes things that are still physically in existence in Israel, and there's nothing like seeing these things firsthand. So all those are reasons, and by being there, one develops a real love for the land, for the people, for what's there, and for a reality that often you don't get in American media.
Fantastic. We have to stop for a break, and we'll come back and talk with Joshua Siegel.
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
Why CNN is in trouble. I'm Bill O'Reilly. The Talking Points memo is next. Save up to 50% off your heating costs with the original SunHeat electronic zone heating systems. SunHeat is safe, comfortable, soft heat for any area of your home. No other portable zone heater puts out more heat, period. SunHeat efficiently heats up to 1,000 square feet. It cannot start a fire, and the solid wood cabinet gives it the appearance of fine furniture. Cut your heating cost in half with the original SunHeat electronic zone heating system. For more information, go to sunheat.com.
Do you owe back taxes, being audited? Whatever your tax-related problem, the former IRS agents and tax professionals at Taxmasters can help solve your tax problems today. Call 1-877-202-7222 or go to txmstr.com. Taxmasters will get between you and the IRS. They'll make sure they treat you fairly and treat you with respect. Call Taxmasters right now at 877-202-7222 or go to txmstr.com. Taxmasters will solve your tax problems.
Talking Points respects CNN, generally speaking, although the network has a few nutty commentators, which network doesn't? But overall, CNN provides solid information to the American public and has done so for decades. But now CNN is in dire trouble. Like many American newspapers, it is having trouble attracting an audience. In October, CNN was fourth in the primetime ratings, and there isn't one program on the network that is successful. They are all poorly rated. But why? I think it's because the CNN business model is obsolete. They rarely are provocative over there, preferring to be cautious in their presentations. In this age of hyper-partisanship, that comes off as boring. And because most Americans get information from the net, there are few surprises coming from CNN. I want CNN to stay around because they are a worthy competitor. But there's trouble. That's a memo. I'm Bill O'Reilly on Westwood One.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
I lost my job and lost my benefits.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
I was only going to pay interest for the first 5 years.
I fell really behind in my mortgage payments and received a foreclosure notice.
But we couldn't pay this.
We got hit pretty hard when the introductory mortgage rate expired.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank.
The housing counselor got to the right people right away.
This is a free service. If you think you're in trouble, don't wait. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. The earlier you call, the better your options.
We were smart. We called a housing counselor before we got into some serious trouble.
To find a certified counselor near you, call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
Thanks for supporting the local businesses you hear advertised and highlighted every day on 1590 WSMN.
Hi there, we're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're your hosts, Rachel, and two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. We'll remind you that we have a new website up as of this week, and you can always visit it. Here are archived shows, all the guests who have been here previously, at www.israelisreal.weebly.com. Israelisreal.weebly, that's weebly.com. You can also find out there how to help us stay on the air, become a sponsor, and you can also contact us through that website. I'm going to just read you an ad. One of our sponsors, and I'm sure that Joshua Siegel would like to know about this person as well. He deals with, he's a intellectual property attorney. And besides us, many countries depend for much of their success and security on their intellectual prowess and advanced technology. Many companies from here and abroad depend on the patent attorneys at Vern Main and Associates to obtain U.S. or global patent protection for their new ideas. Vern Main and Associates is an intellectual property law firm right here in Nashua. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 100 Main Street in Nashua, New Hampshire. Or you can also contact them on the web, vernmaine.com, vernmaine.com, vernmaine.com. Vision.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel and inform you of how its technical advances personally benefits you? Did you know Israel's research develops a heart pump that saves the lives of people with congestive heart failure? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
We're going to hear a song from our resident musician, Rachel Music, www.rachelmusic.com, rahelmusic.com.
Sham yashavnu, sham yashavnu, sham yashavnu gam bachinu, bizachrenu, bizachrenu. בזכרנו את על ערבים, על ערבים, על ערבים בתוך תלינו, תלינו, תלינו כינורותינו. איך נשיר, איך נשיר את שיר השם, איך נשיר את שיר השם על אדמת
the Jewish philosophy and diaspora everywhere else outside Israel from Abraham until today, the first thing a Jewish community is doing is to purchase a land for a cemetery. Please tell us what are the historical aspects and also what's the philosophy behind.
Well, the one thing you can't wait for is when somebody dies to you need to have a place to bury them. The tradition of having a spot goes back to Abraham, where Abraham was living in a place that was not his own land. And the owner of the land, a man named Ephron ben Zohar, says to Abraham, take this piece of land and bury your dead here. It's okay. And Abraham is very insistent that in order, before he can bury his wife, he has to have title to the land, and there's a very extensive land deal that goes on. In our own state, in New Hampshire, most of the first Jewish cemetery in New Hampshire dates to the late 1840s, but the first synagogue in New Hampshire is later. Again, Jews moved into New Hampshire. They needed a place. People died before there were enough people to put together a community. A death is an immediate need. You can always wait for a synagogue, a library, or something else. When the need for a cemetery occurs, it's got to be met. By the way, I got interested in Jewish cemeteries about a dozen years ago when my mother passed away. I needed to make a cemetery monument for her, and I looked for a book. What does a good Jew do when you need some information? You look for a book. There was none written, so I wrote the book, which was called The Field Guide to Visiting a Jewish Cemetery, which was latched onto by the genealogy community and what have you, and has become quite popular and is in its third printing at this point.
So, Mazel tov.
Thank you. Thank you. Rachel has in her hands my newer book called For an Eternal Memory, and Ordinary and Unusual Jewish Cemetery Monuments and How to Create Them, which I do have to confess that the original title of that book was going to be When Humor Transcends Death, because in order, and my reader said, no, you're going, my reviewer said, you're going into touchy territory with a title like mm-hmm. that. But in order to show what is usual and appropriate, I have some incredible examples of some things that are tremendously inappropriate that are in this book.
Well, the both books are very interesting, and they also provide us a great resource for people who really don't know what to do. We don't often talk about death in America as, you know, sort of regular talk, or even when someone dies, it's not even talked about very much. So these books are really good resources for people who need to know.
you know, what strikes me is that you've written those two books about Jewish cemeteries. But think about the Judaism. It's a celebration of life and optimism. And in your role, you are showing the path of this kind of living with optimism. And you are guiding to this. And suddenly you are coming with those kind of of books.
Well, each of us is a story. And the story, we like to think, does not end with our death. There is a guarantee of life in how we are remembered by those who come after us. And the cemetery can be a place to reflect on the life of people who did come before us. Cemeteries don't have to be downer places to go to. What I've noticed is that as life is getting more and more pleasant, cemetery inscriptions are being more and more upbeat, even a little bit more humorous, to reflect on this aspect of life and living and who this person was.
According to Jewish law, a cemetery is considered tameh, a place which we call tameh or impure.
Mm-hmm.
One must enter the cemetery from one place and go out through a different one. And when you are leaving, you must wash your hands. Can you explain if cemeteries are considered impure? And if so, how is that you, a rabbi, are immersing us in this subject? I'm not letting you run away.
No, that's fine. First of all, there are many things that are tameh, that are impure, that afford us many opportunities for life's pleasures. Some of the things that you spoke to, water, washing one's hands upon leaving a cemetery, is not water to clean. It's the water like in The Wizard of Oz, where the water hits the Wicked Witch and she melts. water is purely a spiritual purification as one leaves. And the other superstition that you mentioned is upon leaving the cemetery, one is not supposed to go directly home for fear that the spirit of the dead might follow you, especially if it's a relative who knows where you live. So you're supposed to take a circuitous route, hopefully to lose any spirits that might be following you home. But
sounds
these
like
are
Halloween customs.
Well, you know, I also am a vice president of an organization called the Association for Gravestone Studies, which is not purely a Jewish, it's not a Jewish organization at all. And a plug, by the way, we're doing an event. It's actually being held at Beitenu on November 15th, Sunday afternoon from 2 to 5 p.m. And there'll be four speakers speaking of various aspects of cemeteries, cemetery restoration, cemetery maintenance, genealogy, all kinds of interesting subjects, at least for people who are interested in cemeteries.
So that's at Congregation Beitenu in Amherst, and you can find that at beitenu.org, beitenu.org.
Correct, beitenu.org. Yeah. So the cemetery is a wonderful place to visit, and they do point out that Halloween is a big opportunity for people, for cemeteries to collect some funds to do some of the maintenance projects, because, well, there's long history behind cemetery maintenance issues. These days, most cemeteries do not allow you to purchase a lot without purchasing permanent maintenance of that lot. But 100 years ago, the synagogue, the church, whoever owned the cemetery took care of the facility, and the family was in charge of the maintenance of anything on stones, monuments on the site. These days, with families being fragmented to the four corners of the earth, the cemetery commissions recognize that they're stuck with maintaining these places, so they put the fees in place up front. And so, some of these Halloween events are ways to help maintain these places.
I guess it's appropriate that you're a guest this week. I want to go back a little bit about sort of the customs, Jewish customs that we sort of observe here in America and customs that we observe in Israel. I don't know how many are the same and how many are different, but I'm really also interested. I'm a Bat Kohen. I'm a daughter of the priestly line. And I have to admit that before I knew anything about those customs, when I was in Israel, I was curious to see the graves and the sites of the great sages, you know, all the rabbis that are buried in Sfat, in Safed. And I admit I went into a cemetery, which is not appropriate for a Bat Kohen or a Kohen. But could you explain some of those laws, you know, something about that, what about Kohanes and Levites?
Okay, well, Levites, there are no restrictions as cemeteries with respect to Levites. But with respect to the Kohen, the idea was that the Kohen was supposed, or the priest was supposed to be in a state of purity, and crossing into the cemetery created some issues with that. Now, the point you made, Rachel, applies only if you consider yourself to be an Orthodox Jew. The Reform, most of the more liberal communities look at Jews across a spectrum of equality, and we don't enforce or have those designations. Point being made, though, for the rules specifically state that somebody who is a Kohen or a daughter of a Kohen can only enter a cemetery for the burial of a parent, a child, there are a few limited categories.
Not even.
A sister only if she's unmarried. Level of detail. But what some cemeteries do is they will put the people who are of priestly descent along the outside wall of the cemetery, so that if a family member wanted to visit the monuments or the burial places, they can actually do so without physically entering the cemetery.
We Jews always have the answers, don't we? We have the problems and the solutions. We're going to cut out for a break, another break, and we'll be back again with Joshua Siegel.
Al Naharot Bavel, Al Naharot Bavel, Al Naharot Bavel. Sham Yashavnu, Sham Yashavnu, Sham Yashavnu Gambachinu, Bizachrenu, Bizachrenu, Bizachrenu. Bizachrenu et Zion.
1590 WSMN
and WSMNradio.com.
November is National Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Lung cancer is the nation's leading cause of cancer-related death, killing more than breast, prostate, and colon cancers combined. This year, approximately 160,000 men and women in the U.S. will die from this disease. As with any form of cancer, early detection is the key to survival. New screening methods such as CAT scans are being used in clinical trials. Coughing, wheezing, and fatigue are just some of the symptoms that are often confused with less serious conditions. Smoking is the major risk, but you can develop lung cancer even if you don't smoke. Lung cancer treatments may include surgery, radiation treatments, chemotherapy, or one of several interventional radiology procedures. Discuss lung cancer risks, symptoms, and treatments with your doctor. Find easy-to-understand information from the Radiological Society of North America at www.radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake.
Sassy, we're in danger.
Good idea, Sassy. Go get Mr. Gunderson. You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy!
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year? The majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Sergeant Jason Nielsen was paralyzed while serving as an MP in Iraq.
The sniper from down the alleyway shot me. 6 weeks later, I woke up at Walter Reed, not really knowing where I was at.
Paralyzed veterans of America's National Service officers, such as Sherita Latham, are trained to help injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned.
I could call Sherita at 11 o'clock at night and she would answer the phone and be like, what can I do for you, Jason?
If someone needs you, you listen to them. If they call, we're there for them.
She worked with my wife hand in hand, took care of everything for me just so I could focus on just recovery and trying to get on with life.
If there was no PVA, we wouldn't have the benefits that we have. We wouldn't know about the benefits.
To learn how you can help paralyzed veterans, visit pva.org.
Plan your night, plan your weekend. Listen for the WSMN Community Calendar all day long on 1590 WSMN.
We're back with Israel is Real on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Again, we're your hosts, Rachel and
Sonia.
We're two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Again, we want to remind you, because we're so very excited, that we finally have a website up where you can hear all of our previous guests and our guest from today, Joshua Siegel. The website, again, is israelisreal.weebly.com. Israel is real. One word, dot Weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y.com. And we're talking with Joshua Siegel. He's a rabbi, 25 years running here in Nashua and in New Hampshire, the longest-serving rabbi in New Hampshire. He's also an author. We're talking about his books about Jewish cemeteries, and he's also a skier. Before we learn about your skiing, your passion of skiing, I wonder, you were mentioning before, we were talking about the epitaphs on the monuments, and if you could read us one or two?
Sure. You asked for what I thought an appropriate inscription was. Here's this one is for a man from New Jersey, very active in the military. I believe he was a Korean War veteran. And his inscription reads, "Here lies Irving the Unnerving. No more veterans is he serving. The Lord now he is observing. Patriotic Irving the Deserving forever in our hearts." That I just think that's... I've never met Irving, but if I walked by that tombstone in a cemetery, I would say, gee, you know, this is somebody who certainly had a nice life, and it would be somebody I'd want to meet.
I'd certainly love to meet him.
by contrast, this is the most inappropriate monument inscription that I've ever seen. My wife, and he mentions her by name and where she's from, lived like a princess for 20 years, traveling the world with the best of everything. When I went blind, she tried to poison me, took all my money and all my medication, and left me in the dark, alone and sick. It's a miracle I escaped. I won't see her in heaven because she is surely going to. I'll let you fill in the missing word. That is what I would consider inappropriate.
And so that actually appears on a
yes,
stone.
I won't tell you where I found that one because I don't want everybody checking it out. But when I tripped over that one, I photographed it. It is. A photograph of that monument is included in the for eternal memory, as is many other examples of appropriate and inappropriate.
This is how you will say that the revenge you are taking when it's cold. You are eating the revenge when it's yes. cold. So she was very cold.
Best served cold, yes.
Well, there's a lot more to your books than meets the eye. I know it's really interesting that you are able to sort of bring to light that we can tell more about a person by what we leave behind on their stone, which is
yes, indeed,
which is great. I want to talk a little bit about skiing. And by the way, George, thank you for... I'd just like to introduce George, our producer and sound man.
How you doing?
Hi, George. What's your last name? I can't say
Papoulias.
It. Papoulias.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
Yeah, just so our listeners know that we're not alone here. We like to thank George for all he does for us, too.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I wanted to ask you about your passion about skiing. You are an average skier. Not average. You're more than average.
Don't sell the guy short now.
You're passionate about skiing. You have a kind of a love affair, if you could call it that, with skiing. You can see I'm really good about skiing. But what is this passion all about? What drew you to it?
Well, actually, I found my way into skiing by complete accident. I grew up in far upstate New York. I grew up dirt poor. And I was a hockey player. You didn't need much money back then to play hockey. And when I went to Rensselaer Poly, I wasn't good enough to make the varsity hockey team there. And a bunch of my fraternity brothers, and any of you who know fraternities understand the sensitivity of fraternity brothers, who one day, just after I got cut from the varsity hockey team, said to me, you want to go skiing? And I said, I'm not a skier, I'm a hockey player. And they shook their head and said, not anymore, you ain't. And I went skiing and I said, you know, this is really special. And even that first day when I, like any beginning skier, was falling all over the mountain, was saying, you know, there's something very special here. There's something very pure here. And as I got better and better at it, I began to develop a very spiritual feelings that came to light very much in the context of the beauty of the mountains and the connectedness with the earth as I would dynamically move through the whiteness. And it's funny, when I didn't even notice that I was doing it, but as soon as I start talking about skiing, my hands start to automatically move into the positions that my skis would be in if and when I was making turns. I started teaching skiing, this will be my in the 78-79 ski season, so it's been 30 plus years of teaching skiing. I've been a ski instructor longer than I've been a rabbi. I put together a program. A bunch of my congregants wanted to ski with me a number of years ago, so I put together a program.
Wait, is this the skiing congregation then? If you're interested in skiing, you must join a congregation, Beitenu.
we certainly have many people who don't ski at Congregation Beitenu, but certainly a lot of people who do. Anyway, this group of people asked to ski with me one Sunday during the ski season, and I put together a program for them called SkiKabbalah.com, which they really liked. They really thought it was very special. So I said to them, is this something you might pay to participate in? And they said, absolutely. And so I wrote it up. I own the domain name called Ski Kabbalah 2B1L.com.
I was going to ask about that.
and I have two different programs that I put together, which combine some of the balance of life associated with Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism, and the sensations one might experience when skiing. The Ski Magazine actually picked this up and did an article 2 or 3 years ago on 10 of the most unusual ski instructors, and that article is actually on, there's a link to it on the SkiKabbalah.com website.
I didn't, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wasn't aware that you had a website about skiing of Kabbalah, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank you.
So I know that you told us before, a few moments ago, that you skied in the Height Golan in Israel.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. The Hermon, which is in the very northeastern corner of Israel, it's right on the Syrian border. And I went up there. This would have been 1980, so we're dealing with a few years ago. And it's a pretty narrow road to get up to the ski area. And we actually had to pull off the road to let a tank go by coming the other direction. And there are, of course, big signs all over the place that if you run into a shell, do not touch it. It is it, because you are, while out west there are unexploded shells to deal with avalanche issues, right on that border with Syria, there are reasons that you would not want to touch any shells that you might encounter.
One day maybe we'll solve that problem too, huh?
hopefully. The ski area is quite large for that part of the world. It is, however, so crowded that they do not even sell a full day ticket there. They only sell single ride tickets. And the experience was quite spectacular. I was over there as a student. I didn't have my own equipment. I had to use rented equipment, and I believe that it was junk equipment that they got from a defunct New Jersey ski area. It was terrible equipment. But I had a fun day, and it was a great experience just being over there. It's not a part of the world that you would expect to find skiing in. Speaking of which, the breadth of climate within Israel is amazing. The Hermon, the ski area, is well over 8,000 feet high where you're skiing.
Does that compare to Mount Washington at all?
Much higher. Washington is only 6,000 feet.
Wow.
And if you go south a mere 200 miles to Eilat, all of a sudden you are dealing with tropical climates that are more extreme than Florida. So within such a small piece of land, you have such a diversity of people, climate, recreation possibilities that really is quite mind-boggling and gives the illusion that Israel is much bigger than it really is.
Within 200 miles, and who would have thought that skiing was a sport in Israel?
Indeed.
Do we have any Olympic potential there?
Not with this big crowd.
not that I'm aware of, but
We're going to run out of time soon, and I just want to make sure that we know how to contact you, how to find your books. Where can you be found? Are you available for consultations to give advice for anybody who's looking?
Absolutely. I can be reached by email, rabbi@betenu.org. That's the easiest way to get hold of me.
BETENU.org.
Yeah. My books are available from Amazon. All you need to do is click on my the author name. You'll find my stuff right on Amazon, and the publisher website is cemeterijewish.com. The only thing you really have to remember is there are no A's in the word cemetery. It's all E's, and that's one of the more commonly misspelled words that there is.
I have done it myself. Sonia, can you tell us Shabbat is about to descend upon us in Israel?
As the sun sets in Israel, we welcome Shabbat, the Sabbath day. Our Torah portion this week is Vayera, which is in Genesis. As we follow our Torah journey, we find that up until now, we have created a vision for ourselves that we now understand does not compromise our integrity. Now is the time to manifest all that we have pondered in our minds and hearts. The Baal Shem Tov, in 18th century, founder of the Hasidic movement, says, "A person is where their thoughts are." Nelson Mandela and Natan Sharansky have both said that only their bodies have been in present, but they themselves have never been behind bars. It would be dishonest to say that contemplating about going to gym is equivalent as being at gym. This week's Torah portion, Vayera, asks us to practice what we have promised ourselves. Shabbat Shalom from Israel is Real.
Shabbat Shalom. And I want to remind you that we do have a website, www.israelisreal.weebly.com, israelisreal.weebly.com, where you can also find Joshua Siegel, Rabbi Joshua Siegel, and all of his things. You can click on there to his picture, and you can get right directly to Rabbi Siegel. Again, where Israel is Real, we're on the air every Friday, 9 to 10 in the morning on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News on Talk. And we're also on the internet, wsmnradio.com. Shabbat Shalom from Israel is Real.